verses 36. Repairs and maintenance, roughly around the $35, $40. And all this is in your write-up, in a paper I think that you've got. Gasoline, fuel, and oil, probably the one that's starting to move. $25 for the average, $30 for one and two, and then $21 for region five. I guess I'd have thought more region five being probably more spread out herds would have made had more higher fuel costs. But again, when you throw in the fact of, I see you shaking your head, and I agree with you now, you know, when you start having to produce hay, you got fuel cost, okay, which is driving that up. Vet and breeding, you know, I could ask you guys how much you spend on vet and breeding, and I am not a veterinarian. Barry is not a veterinarian, and I'll tell you, you're probably not spending enough. $25, give or take, is what everybody's spending on their veterinarian health type, herd health type cost. That's probably one area where you will get your biggest bang for your buck by trying to increase that just a little bit, and you get a huge payoff on production.
Very the other thing, that's one of the things we want you to jot down, is this is about risk management, usually with that's the approach that Stan and I take on the expense of veterinary medicine, that whether you buy them from a veterinarian or wherever you buy them. It's about risk management.
Absolutely.
We'll talk more about that.
Yes. Then number 10, interest cost. Again, depending upon how your debt structure is, whether you even owe money or not, you know, everybody's going to have a little difference in interest. Number really doesn't play out that well here, 21 or 22 versus 12 versus 33. So, but again, the 30, I guess the one point that could be made is Region 5 does in fact have debt, paying quite a bit of interest, but are they making the debt work for them? Apparently so, okay? Because they're getting a little higher productivity, their costs overall are tend to be cheaper. Total top 10 costs, $425, $445, $413. And there you're up to 81% of your total cows cost. Okay? You can also kind of use these as benchmarks. Now that you have the data, where does your number stack up? Okay? And depending upon your accounting system, how this number is generated in the SPAL program or the SPAL analysis is you use your inventory as of January 1 of all the females, including first calf heifers, that intend to have a calf that year. Now, it doesn't say she's going to, but on January 1, what is your inventory of all breeding females? Okay. Take then my total interest cost that I have for the cows and divide it by that inventory number, and now you can see where these herds stack up versus yourself. Okay? Just something to think about. Then we get into even smaller stuff, supplies, property taxes, custom hire work, anything that's less than 5% of the total cost. I'm not going to go through those so much because we've got other things to run on to.
I will say that, like, I'm sure there's some folks from Nebraska in here, and on a per-cow basis, this looks pretty cheap, doesn't it? Property taxes in Nebraska, from what I can pick up, are the per-cow are the highest in the nation. They would be, what, $30, $40, $50 a head. Very, very high.
Okay. Good point. So we get down to the bottom line here. Again, the 528, the 552, and the 515 for total expenses. So given all that, here's just kind of a summary of those numbers, the gross revenues, the total expenses, the net incomes. And again, this was in a period, 2003 to 2006, where we had high prices. And if you start looking at it, did I actually pay everything that's associated with that female? Okay. This isn't play numbers. This isn't stuff that we've just dreamed up. This is 56 herds that either myself or somebody working under my guidance has done the analysis, and here's the numbers. Okay, so this isn't makeup here. Net income, on average, losing about $15 a cow. Regions 1 and 2, the $64 a cow loss. Region 5, 30. And again, keep in mind, I'm not trying to show one versus the other so much as I am. Here's resources that are native. I'm not doing a lot with them. I may be doing some brush control, those type things, versus here's a group of herds that are running on improved pastures that are having to deal with higher fuel cost, higher fertilizer cost. How many of you believe in the next 3 years fuel and fertilizer are coming down? Me neither. You got issues, don't you? Okay. Well, do we have issues? Okay. Cost per pound of weaned calf, the one number that I try to focus my guys on, the $112.69, that's what it cost them to raise a pound of weaned calf, $1.12. Are we getting that in the market right now for, say, a 525-pound steer or heifer calf? And some places, yeah, we still are. Okay. Is that going to change? Yeah, it's probably going to change. Okay. $1.24 for regions 1 and 2. Obviously, they got issues. $1.02 for region 5. They've still got a couple of years to go that they can still kind of make it work just as long as costs don't continue to accelerate at that rate. And we hear about this proverbial cattle cycle, and we start seeing calf prices come down. Okay? Anybody see a potential for a wreck happening? We need to be planning now, don't we? Okay? We need to be planning now for it. Again, I've talked about this, the cost per head of weaned calf, the 650 is kind of on the average, so I got to have $650 a head. Or that becomes the accumulated cost value for a developing replacement heifer. All right, other things. And then I'm going to shut up and turn it back over to Barry for just a little bit. Where do cow-calf operations compete? They first, believe it or not, compete on their goals. Back to Steinberger versus the Texas Ranger owner. They first compete on their goals. It's tough to compete against some of those guys, isn't it? Doesn't matter. We still got to do it. Okay? Something seems like an unfair advantage to some people. That's true. But the first place we think about is goals. The second thing that we compete on that we think about is location. And I think we've kind of showed that difference between native country and improved country. Physical location becomes a big issue. They then compete not on variable cost, but they compete on fixed cost. If you were to go back and look at those cost numbers, now I'm throwing out the textbook definition of depreciation, or I'm throwing out the textbook definition of fixed cost. We all heard that. Everybody remember the old anonym that you use for what's fixed cost? It's the dirty five: depreciation, interest, repairs, taxes, and something else. Even though I'm an ag economist, I didn't remember all of them. What's the other one? Anyway, what?
Insurance.
Okay, so anyway, throwing that definition out. And if I was to look at those $560 worth of cost, I could define about 50% of that as being fixed cost. That's pretty astounding. The next place they compete is on their fixed cost. How many of you just have to drive that new pickup? But Stan, I can write it all off in 1 year using one section 179. My accountant said to do it. Any of you heard that? You won't pay as much tax if you use 179. Yeah, hell, if I can't make money, I'm not going to make any paying taxes anyway. Right? Be careful of that. Okay? Be careful of that. Don't necessarily think you have to have all the best stuff in the world. Then they finally compete on direct cost. And as we kind of showed, everybody's pretty much doing the same thing when it comes to feed, vet, those direct variable costs. Finally, we compete on production. And everybody's pretty much doing the same there. Okay? Where should we be competing? Against your own past performance. Now, if you can't identify for me those numbers for your particular operation, you really should be getting them together. Okay? Now, SPAL guidelines, I'll show you a website. They're all on a website at my place. You can go back and see what the definitions are and see how to calculate them, or you can call me I've got ranches that I work with across the country, just like Barry does. I've never been on the ranch before that may be 2,000 miles away, but if they can get me the data either by phone, fax, or email, we can probably put the numbers together for it. Okay. Now, that's not now. Not everybody go back and do that tomorrow, okay, because I won't be back in the office till Saturday. So, next, you ought to compete against your own annual goals. If I'm at 83% calf crop, should I try to set a goal of 83.5? That's not a big change, but yes, I should try to set myself a goal there. If my labor costs are $80 a female, then yeah, I should probably try to set myself a goal of not increasing that above 80. Okay? Then the last is long-term goals. Am I really doing what I think I'm supposed to be doing with the cows? Am I trying to make a living? Am I making it work? Am I fulfilling long-term goals? And hopefully passing it on to the next generation if that was my long-term goal. Keep this in mind. From a business standpoint, first, why do I have the cows? Go back to those four goals. Why do I have cows? What's it costing me? What's my annual cow cost? What's my cost per weaned calf, per head, and per pound? Okay, what's my break-even cost? What's my five largest expenses? Remember, those five, in this case, amounted to 45% of my total budget. What's my five largest expenses? And if I look at them, is it an accurate number? Can I explain it? And if I can explain it, is it manageable in the short term or the long term? And when I say, is it, can I explain it, high feed cost in a drought. Well, Stan, my feed costs last year were high. But heck, we didn't get any rainfall. I was trying to feed myself out of a drought. Okay, I can explain that. That's probably a short-term anomaly. Let's see what we can get it back to if it rains again. So can I explain it? And then is it manageable in the short term or long term? With that, if you want to look, there's a website address, agris.tamu.edu, of my stuff. Okay. Now then, we're going to talk about some of what we think we can do about some of these things. And I'm going to turn it back over to Barry.
No.
Right. There you go.
Well, what are we going to do about it? Nothing.
Everybody's supposed to smile and say, okay, yeah, this is doable. We're fixing to have a slide for that.
Yeah.
We'll go ahead and give away.
Catching up to you, Niffen.
I will make this comment, though. I was in Athens, Texas last November to a group of cow-calf operations about this large, and this is probably not the place, the NCBA national meetings, to be saying this, but I did say to that audience, there will be some of you that will choose not to be in the cow business next year. Now, that is not. This ain't the forum to be saying that. But some of you are going to see this is going to be tough to handle. Okay, but it's not a defeatist attitude. There are things we can do about it. Barry's saying, "Shut up, Stan."
No, that's my responsibility, Stan. Well, the first thing that I'm proposing, promoting, that our institute is the strategic planning manual that, if you don't mind, Robert, I'll borrow yours, that we've given each one of you. Friends of mine in South Dakota State and I developed this, and my colleague, Dr. Kim McQuishan, and I developed this last year for our symposium. If I had to take one step, if I could advise you to do one thing first, it would be to go through a strategic planning process. And I'm going to go through it with you pretty quickly here. And I think if you didn't get them, there's more of them out there. We brought 300 or so, so there should be plenty. If not, you can Google King Ranch Institute, and I'll get you one somehow. The strategic planning has not been used in ranching by very many people. It's been used by some of the larger operations that I've worked with, but even I'm still surprised that this isn't a business tool that we haven't adopted. Maybe because of that big price run-up that Stan was showing us, we could just kind of get along for a while. But the process that we've whittled down is we've got, it's relatively simple. It's all laid out in that book. But the first step is to chart the course or creating a shared vision of where you want to go. And to do that, you need to assess the current situation and inventory ranch resources. And that's a little bit different than just balance sheet. And I work with our students on this. The other thing, on top of doing it in terms of just a laundry list and values, I really recommend that you put on some type of 1 to 5 scale, you put, you put down a 3 or a 2, so that asset is old or it's worn out, or you rank the productive capability of that asset. And the next thing you do is conduct a SWOT analysis, and SWOT is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And that's really much trickier than just a little acronym. Lots of people put down threats that are at the macro level, but the real threats that you want to be thinking about are in your own business. And things that whether or not 5 more ethanol plants get built or not is not a threat. High fuel prices is a threat. So you got to be really careful and do this extremely well. And based upon the current situation that you have in terms of labor and cattle and land and opportunities and weaknesses and threats, you build a vision of where you want to go. And it's going to be, it might be, based upon what's going on in this industry, different than where you've been. The second stage is determining strategies that achieve your vision, and you've probably heard of gap analysis, and gap is just the difference between where you are and where you want to go, and then you start trying to bridge that gap with strategies. And the vision has to be achievable, and you want to be careful that you don't just let your vision erode away. I can't get there, so I'm going to erode it away. That things have to be achievable and to begin with, and then you develop specific things that you're going to do to close the gap. The third step that we recommend is called scenario planning. It's laid out in your manual, and I'm not going to go through all that, but it's a very, very powerful technique to make sure that the strategies that you adopt aren't in conflict with each other. And if you're going to if you're going to build a complex grazing system to improve the utilization of your rangeland, but there's no labor in your community to get that accomplished, then you've got two strategies that are at odds with each other, and that's what we're trying to avoid when you do that exercise. It's all written out in the manual. And the last one is to merge the two, the fourth stage is to merge the two, and then the fifth stage is putting your plan into action and measuring success. The other business tool that I'm pushing, our institute's pushing, is the use of a widely used business tool called the Balanced Scorecard, and we've got a manual on that, and if you email me, I can get you one. You can print it. It's on PDF. You can print it off the web. It's a way of measuring progress towards goals. It's used by almost all major companies, organizations. I was telling my younger brother about it, Roger, and he's on the hospital board of Cherry County, Nebraska, and Roger said, "Wow, that's what we're doing. I didn't know it was called a balanced scorecard, but that's what we're using in managing our hospital." So it's used everywhere. It's not widely used in agriculture, and it's a very, very powerful tool. So Number one thing that that Stan and I recommend today is to do some strategic planning and really thoughtfully prepare for the future. So, Dan Niffen, are you going to use the rearview mirror to run your ranch? And Dan's point, not everybody could hear it, was that looking backwards in time is really, really a tricky business because, you know, you can look at trends and patterns and we're breaking them. And we're uncomfortable with them. And so you can look through the rearview mirror and you're going to see these steep curves and you don't know where they're going to go. Stan showed you one where price was plateauing. So it isn't that you don't need a rearview mirror. You don't need to look at trends and patterns. You absolutely do. But they're so steep, most of them are changing so rapidly. Land values, taxes, input costs, available labor is going the other way. You know, lots of things are changing. And so just running your outfit out of the rearview mirror, which it has been a great strategy, is not going to be enough. So what Stan just went through with you was what, you know, NCBA and a lot of us have been working on, trying to promote for
20 years,
right, Ron, is looking at the dashboard. And so the analogy is to find out where the heck you are right now. And that's really, you know, this is it. There's no more excuses. We can't just do this on a run-up in cap prices or on $30 oil anymore. This business, and we're lucky we got consumer demand back, and hopefully we'll get all our exports back and all this, you know, stuff. But forget about it. Find out where you're at, either using spot